When is the last time you listened to a podcast about web development, web design, and small business and didn't fall asleep? Yes, we cover web development, web design, and small business, but like actual human beings with personalities. If you're a beginner, we're not going to talk over your head. It's more like asking your buddy for help. We have guests, we have fun, and let me tell you, these two can get off on a tangent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to HTML All the Things Podcast. This is Matt Lawrence and Mike Curran.
That's right, everybody. We are back, and this is the HTML All the Things Podcast. This episode is titled Make a Project and Get a Job with Puru. In this loaded interview episode, we're going to be sitting down with Puru, the creator of macOS Web. You've probably seen it where you go to a website and boom, macOS right in your browser. You can kind of play with it because he recreated a few different apps and played with some settings, dark mode, etc. So we're going to be discussing how making projects can make an impact on you finding a job. We're also going to be talking about his passion for open source projects. And also, I suppose, and I'm already trying to hold back the laughing because it gets pretty ridiculous and funny, is his passion, I guess, for making sure that if you have a bottom nav, whether or not the person is left-handed or right-handed or holding the phone with their left hand or right hand and trying to reach for the menu button or the navicon with your thumb, your left thumb or your right thumb. So we had a blast in this episode. Like I said, I'm already holding back the laughs. So let's cut to that interview right now. All right, everybody, we have Puru on the line here. Before we jump into this packed episode, Puru, how's it going? What's up? And what have you been working on?
I'm at. It's been going really, really good. I'm really excited to be on this podcast, which I have secretly dreamed for the last 3 years. So it's quite surreal to be here. And right now, I'm working on a multiple side projects. Quite fun, regular old developer life.
Love it, Puru. I'm super excited for you to join us. So like a little bit of history for everyone. I think around 2021, when I was kind of deep into the Twitter game, I saw a little project pop up in the Svelte ecosystem, and I believe React too, right? I think you did both React and Svelte at some point, but in the Svelte one, that's the one that I saw. It was like a macOS clone, so like a little operating system built with Svelte, and it had so many cool features, and I was just like kind of mind blown. And I even showed Matt at the time. I'm like, dude, this is crazy. Like the animations, the features, like it just feels like an operating system. And it was just like a little side project that you made, Puru. And just a preface for everyone listening, right? Like what I want to get out of this episode and why we brought Puru on is right now it's very difficult to break into the industry. And it's just, you know, competitive job market, all the layoffs and stuff like that. But there's still paths forward. And we've been kind of preaching many different paths, you know, make projects, network, you know, open source, maintain, like so many different paths. And Puru is like the definition of someone that took all of that. And I'm not going to take full credit for it because I'm sure he heard the advice from a million different other people. But he took all of those paths and is just like, I'm going to do all of them, essentially. I'm going to do them perfectly and I'm going to get my job offers. So I want him as an example here that it is possible. You might have to do extra work outside of whatever you're doing, but if you follow the paths, you can get there. So thank you for coming on again, Puru. And the first question I'm going to ask you is very related to that macOS thing. Like, what made you make that? What made you recreate macOS in the different frameworks? I just want to hear your mindset there and about the process a little bit even.
All right. So it's in November of 2020. And I am quite bored, as in which project to do. I need to do something. I have not programmed in 1 month because at that time I just got into college, the orientation, getting into college, etc. It's just very, very tough. So I've not been coding for 1 month. And now I'm bored. What thing to do now? I don't have any idea what to do. At one point, I was thinking, okay, maybe I can create a file explorer of my own, a web-based file explorer. That would be quite fun to do. Or I could recreate an operating system. So I had these two options. And I was thinking, only an idiot would recreate an operating system. What's there? It's already made. At least if I create a file system, a file manager, that would be just so much more useful and everything. Little did I know what would actually happen. So at that time, and I also started to I also wanted to learn React at that time. Had not dabbled in React at that time. So I thought, okay, this is a good opportunity. Let me start to learn React by recreating something. And I chose operating system because it is much, much easier. I just have to put a wallpaper, create the doc, and everything is done. So I created that in React. It was using React, Framer Motion, Style Components, the all of the hot technologies in React back in 2020. And it was good. The only problem is, at that time, I had a very cheap Windows laptop trying to run the macOS. Now, macOS is fine. It's just that the little dock animation that you see. So when you hover on the icons, they get bigger. And the closer an icon is to the cursor, the bigger it gets. It's almost a millisecond level precision. It worked well, but it used to be quite janky. So I thought, okay, this is too much. And of course, the profiler, when I checked, voila, 150 kilobytes gzip, which comes down to almost 1 megabyte of JavaScript. So the V8, the Chrome's V8 internal engine has to go over, if you think about it, 1 million, I believe. How much would that be? 1 million bytes almost. It has to parse over them. Okay, maybe it's 1 million billion. I'm not sure. Let me know after this. So that's why it was, and it was too much. So then I thought, maybe I can make it better. And then I thought, I can get rid of maybe style components. So history, I had no idea about web performance at that time. So that's why I chose the most random thing in the world, which is style components, which has nothing to do with the performance of the dock. And then I got it out, and that worked out pretty well. But it still did not affect the performance that much. So then I thought, what else could I do? Now I have plain CSS here. What else is there? This is React, and React has been known to be slow. React is just slow. There's a lot of diffing that goes on in the virtual DOM. It's generally slow, but there's a solution to a problem. We have Preact. Preact is just a 3 kilobyte version of this. So then I rewrote the entire app to Preact, the easiest half an hour of my life, I would say. And then it was done. And magically, the doc actually got much, much faster. So it's maybe because of how Preact works, how it diffs the virtual DOM, something. But it worked really, really fast. And the bundle size had dropped from 150 kilobytes to somewhere along just 60. So less than half at that time. So it was pretty good. But then I was still hungry for even smaller sizes, as small as I could go. And then I thought, okay, we already have, we are using plain CSS. We are using Vite for, but Vite does not affect the runtime, the bundle size, everything. We are using Preact, and there's Framer Motion, but Framer Motion I can't get rid of because there's nothing else. I need a library. So then I thought, okay, there's no other way. And then I just let the project sit for a while. Few months later, I rewrote my blog from Stencil.js to Svelte for the very first time. At that time, it was Svelte Sapper. And I thought, okay, Svelte is really good. Let me try to rewrite my macOS in Svelte just to see how it goes. So that's when I started. I started rewriting the components, just copying one component at a time and then copying and then pasting it over in the Svelte project and then getting rid of all the React stuff, everything, the return, the function, everything. Turns out that it took only 2 days because of how simple Svelte is. My dependencies in package.json, it almost became a third of what it was before. I got rid of Framer Motion because Svelte has built-in animation capabilities, which I use for the doc. And the bundle size, which was 62 kilobytes before, came down to just 28.5. That includes the CSS. So it was really, really small at the time. And the doc animation, it became so smooth that I tried to test on really old Windows computer, even worse than my current one at that time. Even there, it was 100% smooth, was not dropping any frames ever at all. And at that point, I kind of finalized it. I added a few features like wallpapers, etc. It just, considering how Svelte works, the size of the app, it never really grew. I added 3-4 apps to it, and the size never grew up, ever. So that's because of Svelte itself. Svelte is just so small and tiny and fast and performant. And just a little fun fact after that, based on the context of this podcast, because I like to say that because I created macOS, I got to own a MacBook because of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because you had an old Windows computer at the time, and you were kind of recreating Mac just as something fun and interesting because you didn't have Mac OS. And it's a super interesting journey because I think it really goes to show how much we take performance for granted a lot of times, like especially myself for sure, because like I have very powerful computers, like a desktop and a MacBook with an M1 processor, like very powerful. So really, I would have never seen that issue that you saw, Peru, with the slowdown, and I would have never gone down that route. Now, having said that, I have reached many issues with React outside of just like regular animation performance, like use effect. We can talk about that a million times, but regardless, like it's just a very interesting journey from rebuilding out of necessity almost. And I bet that taught you a ton in terms of architectural stuff. And just, I feel like it's a really good skill to have to be able to rebuild something in multiple ways, whether it be multiple frameworks, multiple languages or whatever. Like that really does make your mind work a little bit differently than others. And I can almost guarantee you, you've probably talked about it a little bit in like interviews and stuff. And most people were pretty happy with the responses there. Like, I know if I was interviewing you and you took me through that story, I would be like, okay, we're hiring him.
that's actually true. I've been in over roughly 15 interviews until now in total. Every single one started with, so your macOS is pretty cool. Would you like to go through it? So that project, even though it's 3 years old, I'm still riding the wave of its success.
I like that you like thought of the old, like working, getting it working well on an old computer, because I know even web developers that have jobs today, it kind of goes over their head a little bit because they're just thinking, you know, get this out quick. We have to have like the latest features, blah, blah, blah. We have to make it look super flashy. That's usually what kills the performance. Super flashy, really high definition graphics, so like nice photos and stuff. Again, they're not getting the compression. They're not like caring about the performance. And because it's in a web browser, you just think, oh, like it'll run in a web browser. You don't really think about performance as much sometimes as you would a desktop application, like a video game or something like that, where obviously it's like one-to-one, like, can my computer run this game? No, it can't. It's not powerful enough. But you never think or rarely think of a site being that way. And Mike, I mean, you were laughing at me a while ago. I was still running my computer from college, literally a computer that was like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 feet high. I feel like it was a massive computer. It was about 12 years old, 11 years old, something like that. And I could not open like news websites. You'd open up like IGN.com and it's like, oh, here comes the fans. Like, uh-oh. And then Edge would be complaining and freaking out, like, close your other tabs. Like, what? It's like, oh, hang on. And not good. So I'm glad someone out there is thinking of performance for people like me running a 12-year-old, 6-foot-high computer.
I mean, to be honest, it's not something that I learned. It's just that, so I'm from India and we did not have good internet when I started to learn. So I started learning back in 2015. India got its internet revolution back in 2016, and it took a few years for it to come to my house. Because of that, I had no internet, and the laptops I was using were maybe my father was using, and then he gave it to my sister, and then my sister gave it to me. And was as cheap as it could get, and very, very just old kind of laptops. And because of that, it was a constraint. I could not afford node modules, nothing. I was literally downloading the documentation pages so I could read them later on when I had no internet. So because I had that kind of technical upbringing, I would say it's like performance, something I don't even have to think about. It just in my nature at this point. To the point that I've actually sacrificed on features, which I should not have done. But hey, I'm over that. That's just my two cents.
Love it. Okay, so really cool project. Like the macOS thing obviously is taking you pretty far. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, and I wanted to get your perspective for new developers out there that are trying to break in, or for someone that's trying to like switch jobs, or someone that's been laid off recently and is trying to upskill and stuff like that. I think project, like we can all agree that projects are necessary at this point. Like, you know, as a new developer or even as a senior, like an intermediate developer, to go from job to job, you need to show what you can do, not just say what you can do. So I'm curious your thought process here. Like how in depth do you think these projects are? Like how, like your macOS project, you spent a lot of time trying to get the performance right. You spent a lot of time trying to get the animations right. Is it important to go down those granular like pathways Or is there another kind of path you should go down when creating a project with the goal of being hired or being noticed?
So about the depth part. So, okay. So just, I want to start with this thing that make projects. Anyone who is listening and you want to land a job, or even if you don't want to land a job, but want to be future safe, please make projects, as many as you can. But not just any project. So for those people who are just starting out, follow the tutorials, whatever they are saying, like copy it to the T if you can. But after you are done, add your own personality to it. So for example, nowadays, there are so many Netflix clones. Almost every other new developer is making a new Netflix clone. So to all those people, why just make it a Netflix clone, which is dedicated to multiple websites? Why not make it a Harry Potter Netflix? So you change the entire theme of the website to be Harry Potter style, or we just got Dune Part 2. So it can be just black and yellow and it would look so, so insane. Those kind of stuff. So the main part is you add some personality to it to make it look like yours, because anyone can make a Netflix clone. It's on the YouTube. There are 4-hour tutorial, 6-hour tutorial. But if you add your own personality, that sets you apart. And the last thing that I would like to add is, this is something that could be controversial because we have ChatGPT now, but write about it. Write about how you made it, what changes you did to it. If there was any hard part that you got, which part was it? For example, I have an entire blog dedicated to creating the macOS dock, just a dock, an entire blog post dedicated to it. So I've written a lot of blog posts, and to be honest, those blog posts are more important than the project itself, because a project, someone goes to the link and they open it, they see, okay, cool, I don't know what to do with this, what is happening here? Because most people, you have to put an onboarding in your projects usually, and people don't do that. So instead of that, you can just write a blog post about how you did this, what were the initial parts, put some engineering diagrams, Excalibur diagrams, etc. And those will get you much, much farther than making 100 projects. Like I would say, a developer with 10 projects and 10 blog posts will go farther than a developer with maybe 50 projects and 0 blog posts.
That's super insightful, honestly. I think that's the first time someone's recommended that exact strategy here. And it makes total sense, honestly, because the idea that a project will take you to a certain degree is great. Yeah, like you have a project, you have a GitHub repo, but you're right. People don't do those things. People don't go in and check all the different features that you've built out. They don't know the challenges that you went through. They don't know the technology that you've used. So it's just cool. Like, okay, cool. You've made a Netflix clone with your own personality. It has your own like little feature to it. It's cool. Like, awesome. But that's it. It's shallow. Whereas a blog post can go very in depth, and you can SEO a blog post so you can get the right eyes on it. And then it extends the life cycle of this project that you spend a lot of time on, and gives you, I think another thing, like when you write the blog post, you start thinking about the project that you've created a little bit differently, and you document it. And 5 years down the line, when you need to go back and talk about that project, you have that documentation that you can talk about. And again, and like in interviews and when you're going from job to job, like Puru mentioned, he's been talking about the same project for like, what is it? 4 years now, 3 years now.
3 years.
Yeah. So like if he didn't document it, he probably would have forgotten certain things. And you can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But like that, those blog posts help. And I'm sure that before someone interviews you, a lot of times they would have already gone through some of your blog posts and have context on you. Like, there's just so many benefits to it. Like I could just talk about it forever. I know Matt, you do blogging right now is kind of like top priority for you. So like you have, it's a very defined structure and stuff like that. And like we've learned this, that it is an important aspect of the SEO lifecycle, the content lifecycle. Like you need to have something out there that can survive after someone listens to your podcast, looks at your project, talks to you and stuff like that. It's really key.
And it's easy to get bogged down too. Like I like how you married the project with the blog post. Cause I mean, it seems like a no brainer, but sometimes you get so into SEO, which I did, I think about a couple years ago now, or get super into it. I haven't done a project in a long time because I'm learning SEO. And then you sit there and you're just watching, you know, the trends, and you're learning and you're using the tools that you've learned to use for SEO. Then you go, okay, I have my keywords, I have my topic, I'm going to go write about it. And I start writing it, and it just sounds like a textbook because I am not in it at all. I haven't done anything with that technology. I'm just trying to get the clicks from the people on Google. And then it becomes, oh, I guess I should, you know, either do a personal project or in our case, you know, work on a customer project and try this feature out and get a bit of hands-on experience so that I can say, you know, little pieces. Like I've started adding little pieces like, hey, this part was confusing to me because of this. So if you're stuck like this, this is how I fixed it. That would never have been in my original blog post or at least many of which were never published because it just was like, I'm just writing down the documentation. I'm just basically copying, not copying the documentation. And it just did not sound good.
Agreed. Like just adding your own personality to it, to the project and the blog post itself, that's the real stuff, to be honest. Yeah, and just one more thing I would like to add to it is that just a little bit of warning: if you start writing blog posts, nobody's going to read your first 30 blog posts. They'll have maybe 5 views, 10 views maximum. Nobody gives a shit about blog posts. But there's only one group of people who do: recruiters. So if those are your target, blog posts will definitely work, because if people, even they don't work, but if someone's going through a profile does, they're actually going to go through a blog post, everything, et cetera, et cetera. And if they see that you have a lot of passion, you're in, just like this.
And I could give some context to that. Like I've spoken to a lot of recruiters and I've done a lot of hiring. The reason that recruiters care about that is that it's easier for them to place you. Because if for recruiters, the time that it takes them to take a person like that they find and put them into a job, it's money for them. Like that's just cash. Right. Like if they can take you and they see that, hey, this person has a bunch of passion and he's not only like versed in the skills based on his resume, but I can prove to the potential employer that I'm trying to hire him on that he has this passion through these blog posts, it's going to be a direct path. Like, I you know, it's a 60% chance of me placing him rather than a 5% chance if it's just a resume. So it's a statistics game. It's a numbers game. And use that to your advantage. Like Puru is giving you knowledge right now and like key knowledge, and you need to take every single little advantage right now in this market as you can to try to do better than the person, the other people, the other 90 people, the other 100, the other 200 people that are applying to the same job as you. With that though, Puru, what about networking? So I know like you've done the project, you did the blog post, which is sick. Networking, like I know that you're definitely there as well. Like you talk to a lot of people inside the Svelte community. You're present on Twitter, like off and on, like just like everyone else. But how important do you see that as a step to getting the first job or switching jobs and stuff like that?
Networking is probably the most important thing that I've done. And by networking, I just mean just shitposting on Twitter. No, I'm kidding. Just not shitposting, posting good stuff also. So most of the time when I'm posting on Twitter, it is maybe some code snippet that just came out or a project of mine or some problem that I'm going through, how I overcame it. How does that relate to jobs? It does not at all. And that's the fun part of it. Just like writing blog posts by just being active on Twitter and these websites, and in specific, these specific segments, I would say these web dev segments, etc. You're actually showing your passion completely. And this also attracts people. For example, your inbox is going to start getting flooded with recruiters. Now, 80% will be scam, maybe some Web3 crypto bros, etc. But hey, the other two, they can turn out to be completely legit. So I would say, yes, please use Twitter, LinkedIn, anything that works for you. Be consistent with it, and it will actually work out. In fact, to be honest, all of my jobs that I've gotten have been through Twitter, almost every single one. When I was searching for a job, I posted on Twitter. It blew up to maybe 600 likes or something. And I got almost 50 offers within 2 days, which is so wild in the current economy. It's beyond my wildest dreams. So networking does help a lot. And specifically in today's world, because job postings, I would say, are an absolute scam. Why I would say an absolute scam is because you go to these websites, I'm not going to name them for legal purposes, but you go to these websites, whether it is one of those job aggregators or the company's websites themselves, those openings are for maybe half the time, maybe even more than that, they are put there for abiding with the law. So multiple governments have this requirement that you have to put the job posting online or on some kind of job board or something for equal chances. It just, when they put it there, they're putting it and then never ever looking at it. And there's also a lot of competition. For example, one front-end job I saw it had 10,000 contenders and nobody was getting selected, because that's the thing. Companies don't care. Almost all of the hiring that happens is through networking. You know someone, or someone's really, really active and someone in your company is reaching out to that person. That's how most of the job roles get filled. And in big companies, there's a lot of internal hiring. So not even external people are getting hired. These are internal people just changing departments. That's also networking of some form. So that's what in today's world, these job postings, they are a scam. Just network. Cold email someone if you want the job. Reach out to someone on Twitter. Just be fun with multiple people in their mentions, etc. Be helpful, be good, and you're going to suddenly start receiving job offers on your email, and then you wonder, when the hell did you give your email out?
There's a classic one. We actually got hired for a couple of different jobs because we had a couple of social media posts go viral. And that was exactly my question. I went everywhere and I was like, where is this email? Because like my other email is available, but they somehow contacted me on this like tertiary email I use for vendors. And I was like, how did they? I mean, okay, like whatever, I guess. Like, I don't know how they got this insider information, but they made exact reference to why they wanted to hire us. And like, they paid us. We did some work and they paid us. So like, okay.
Yeah, it's wild. I get some weird emails, inbox stuff where like, I work for a company right now and I'll get emails to that company's email talking about HTML, all the things. And I'm like, I have like a public email that you could easily find. I just find it weird that I get contacted on my work email about HTML, all the things stuff when I literally have it in public, what my HTML, all the things email is, or my Digital Dynasty email. Like, I have a million different public emails. My one email that's not public is the one that I get like reached out on. I don't know how people find my email, but it is what it is. They probably just type in like my name at the company that they know I work for, and that's how they find it. It's how most people found it. It's fine. But honestly, let's transition, right? Like, so we talked a little bit about the networking stuff. We talked about breaking in. We talked about the really cool project that Pura built. The next thing here that I want to talk about, and I'm really interested in myself, is Svelte. So as you heard Puru's progression from React to Preact all the way to Svelte, I think there's a lot more to that discussion as well, because not only has Puru like ported his macOS stuff to Svelte, I think that caught the eye of some people, if my understanding is correct. Or actually, I'll let you describe the situation of how you went out to build the new Svelte site. And I'm not sure if it was Svelte or SvelteKit. You can clarify that, but like, what was that process like for like you know, you came in, you kind of liked the ecosystem, the Svelte ecosystem, and now you're a maintainer essentially and part of the Svelte team?
Yeah, pretty much. It was really, really wild. So I will start with how it happened back in 2022. My project went really, really crazy back in 2021. And in 2022, the core maintainers who were running the Discord, all of them thought, okay, so a bunch of these people in our Svelte Discord, they're very, very helpful, or they have done really good work for Svelte, which has gotten it more reputation, more adoption, etc. So and then that's where the Svelte Ambassadors program was born. It's not something special. It's just that in the beginning, 10 people were given the ambassador status, which means these are some of the most prominent Svelte people we have. So I'm one of the original ones. Right now we have, I think, almost 30, if I'm not wrong. All of them amazing people. So I got added as Svelte ambassador, and that's because of the macOS thing, because it made Svelte more famous. I like to believe it made Svelte more famous. I could be delusional, but back in 2023, February, they reached out to me and they asked if I would like to rebuild the Svelte websites. The Svelte website, primarily the Svelte.dev, was at that time just a single page documentation. So if you open a documentation website and if you had the old Windows computer that I had, then your fans are going to just commit suicide at that point. It was just extremely heavy, text heavy. Scrolling would be extremely janky and just pretty bad. And the worst part, no dark mode. Can you imagine that? That's really hell on earth. So multiple problems with that website at that time. So they asked me to come help it, and I do have a little bit of experience with the documentation website because I built one myself. It's for neodrag.dev. So they invited me in and they said, okay, Puru, make this website Svelte.dev a multi-page website and make it look like our other website, Kit, the SvelteKit website, which at the time had multiple pages, dark mode also, and just a more modern design. The Svelte.dev website had been neglected for a while, so they brought me in. I came in, we had a lot of conversation, and roughly 4 months and 4 months and how many messages? I think 5,000 Discord messages later, I unveiled the new website, and the new website is pretty sweet. For example, it has split everything into multiple pages. It has a new JavaScript to TypeScript toggle, so any of the JavaScript code base JavaScript code snippets, they can be converted to TypeScript, so you can directly copy and voila, you're done. It also got the really, really nice feature from SvelteKit documentation, is that just like VS Code, when you hover on symbols, you get some type information, some text about it, what its type is, etc., etc. Now you could get the same thing on the Svelte.dev website itself, which was really, really cool. And of course, dark mode was there, which was the most needed feature. And also, just a little bit internal thing, I had a lot of arguments with the maintainers. It almost caused a civil war inside our Discord, the maintenance Discord, about converting the navigation bar to a bottom navigation bar. So if you go to the Svelte.dev website, or kit.svelte.dev, or learn.svelte.dev, any other Svelte websites, they all have a bottom navigation bar rather than the top one, which is a very unconventional choice for a website. In apps, we have bottom navigation bar everywhere, but it's very non-existent in web. And I fought really hard for it. I made maybe 22 total proof of concepts before it got finally approved. At the last moment, Rich Harris himself jumped in and fixed a lot of the animation stuff. But hey, now the final website has a really, really smooth bottom navigation bar, which I'm really proud of. And I believe that was one of my biggest contributions. And not just that, I think just after that, Next.js also got a bottom navigation bar, like a partial navigation bar. So I'm pretty excited that it got there also, because Rich works in Vercel, so you know some networking happened at that point also. And multiple of the Svelte websites now, the Svelte ecosystem, Melt UI, I think Bits UI also, multiple ecosystem websites, they also use a bottom navigation bar though. So that's also a good one. The only exception to this would be my own documentation website, which itself does not use a bottom navigation. Should get around to that at one point.
Got him. Rugged the whole community to do it and then doesn't even do it himself. Good job, Puru.
Yeah, I got lazy on that front.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. No, it's sick. I love the bottom navigation. I think a while ago, like, I wanted to standardize bottom navigation. I ran into one weird issue. It was my own mental issue where I was like left-handed versus right-handed people. I was like, how do you...
You have no idea how much argument we had about it. At one point, I wanted to open an issue on the Chrome tracker or whatever to ask for a feature, to a media query to tell whether the user is left-handed or right-handed. Ridiculous. When I found out that couldn't be done, I even added a little bit of my own controls. So there's a dark mode toggle. I was like, okay, left-handed, right-handed mode. I actually did add it for proof of concept. Now I realize it was the most stupidest decision on that part. I'm so glad Rich literally struck me down. He struck me down pretty hard on that. And I'm so glad he did, because, oh Lord, that would be a terrible idea.
I love that I wasn't the old. I'm vindicated, Puru. I'm vindicated, because I had such an internal struggle with myself that, like, I was just like, how do you do it? How I'm left-handed, and I'm like, this isn't comfortable for me, so I need to have like a way to detect. Oh, okay, good. It's not a big deal.
And agree, it's not a big deal. And the exactly. way that we dealt with the problem is we just increased the x-axis padding. So the Svelte logo, we shifted it more to the center, and the hamburger button, we shifted more to the center. We shifted everything to the center. So now if you're left-handed and you want to click on the menu, your thumb can probably reach across and do that.
It can. I can confirm that I just tried it, and it most definitely can do it. It was a completely useless argument that I had with myself. Sounds like it was a pretty good and useless argument that you guys had internally, but I'm glad that I'm not the only one that thought it was the thing that was going to kill my bottom bar. But cool. I love that.
I will say this, though, is on Samsung phones, there is a left and a right-handed pull-down mode. You do, like, I'll just even show you, like, if we open this up, like, there's my home screen. If I pull down, it pulls it, but then I can switch. Oops. I can switch which side it goes to. So like I can click this little arrow and it will go left and right. So there is a bit, there's still the question, and it'll always be looming.
the Puru in that world won. That's what happened.
In the galaxy world? Like, galaxy world, they were having the same conversation internally.
Yeah, did not strike them down. And
Although I'm going to be very honest, if the browsers do ship a media query, I'm going to implement it right then and there.
I feel like it's possible. Well,
Browser setup.
Browser setup. But browser like, setup. People switch hands when they're using their phones.
Yeah.
I want to be able to detect where their thumb is. Like,
you know what, though?
This discussion literally can go on.
Four fingers on the right hand side of the phone, or four, man.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Doable. It's doable, but like, how do you detect four fingers? The phones don't have that detection, right?
Oh, like, no, we have the technology. We have to convince all phone makers to add touch sensitivity, and then touch through a case, because this is a rugged case. So you have to have touch through a rugged case, of which wireless charging barely works already.
Or detection of thumb above screen.
Kind of starting to sound like Tabs versus Spaces now.
Yeah. God. No, that's great. Okay, awesome. That was such a cool insider story there. I appreciate you sharing that with us. That whole process seemed like it was both fun and probably pretty stressful, because everything that could go on inside of an open source project like that is not easy to deal with. But the site is sick. I highly recommend everyone go check out svelte.dev. It's a great site. There's a bunch of other stuff that I don't think you even talked about, Peru. There's like the tutorial and stuff I think that you revamped and all that, from my understanding. Really cool, really cool work there. Kind of just like following up on the previous topics that we discussed, do you feel like becoming a maintainer, becoming part of a project like this, has opened up opportunities for you? Or is this just part of like a kind of, you know, it was an opportunity, you took it, it was great, but it's not the path that you would recommend for everyone to, you know, get a job?
Okay, so for someone who wishes to get a job, and they wishes to get a job like, hey, I don't have to hunt, rather they are all coming to me and I can just pick whichever one I want to do, there is nothing better than being an open source maintainer. There's absolutely nothing. Like this is the top. Like if you can't see the screen, I mean, you can't see the screen, I'm literally banging the table right now, because geez, this, I feel about it. If you are a maintainer of an open source project, and if it's a very, very famous one, it's guaranteed for you. It's pretty much guaranteed, because open source is a way to make software which you can improve, but not just you, the entire world can improve, and they can benefit from it, and you can benefit from it. But if you look at from a professional point of view, like getting a job and everything, they see everything. They see how you deal with people and the issues. They see how your pull requests, everything. They see your code quality. Everything is out in the open. And just the fact that you are an open source maintainer of a big project, or even if not a big project, even if you have multiple libraries of yourself and you are committing to them, that itself is a huge thing, because ultimately, in the end, all these things show that you have passion, dedication, and talent for it. These are the three things that any company will ask for. And if you are an open source maintainer of a big project, or just your multiple of your own, you're pretty much set. So any of you who are starting, please get into open source if you can. Just, it is the best thing. Like once you get through the job, you realize how much, you realize the real joy of doing open source. Like open source is very, very joyful. I just can't tell you. Like screw all of the job stuff and all. It's a fun to be open source. I just can't. It's a fun. It's a really, really fun thing to be open source.
That's okay, the most.
Sorry,
passion.
I just got a very, very excited.
Yeah, that's the most passion I've ever heard about open source, but I love it. I love it. You know what? I'm gonna join open source. I'm gonna be a maintainer tomorrow, just from that passion. Because yeah, it can be super fun. So I 100% agree, and I think like if you can find the passion, you can find Puru's passion especially, and the fun. Whew, that's gonna be tough to stop. Like you're literally gonna be turning away offers in like a you know a bear market for developers, which is I'm assuming pretty much what Puro is doing at this point.
Open source software for detecting which hand you're holding your phone with is what Mike is gonna start contributing to. Start be the change, Mike. Be the change, Puru. Both of you. I'm not gonna help you. I'll blog about it. I'll do that.
It's such a hard problem to solve. God, love it.
Well, if you blog about it on GitHub README, then hey, you're part of the open source.
Hey,
it's a big brain right there. Big brain move. Love it. All right. Well, thank you so much, Puru, for coming on. I had a blast. I'm sure we'll have you on in the future again. There's going to be a bunch of other projects that you're probably going to build and other stuff that we can talk about. But I just want to kind of throw the floor to you. Anything you want to share, any links, anything that you share in here, we'll throw in the links into the show notes. All the floor is on you.
So I got one thing. Everyone, if you are listening to this and if it's not too late, please go watch Dune 2. It's better than open source. Trust me, just go watch. It's better than everything. Please go watch Dune 2.
I'm going to watch that on Sunday. That's okay. That's it. Drop the mic. Yeah. Okay. We'll have Puru's Twitter handle in the show notes, which will have all the links that are probably relevant to Puru at the time. And again, thank you for coming on. Loved it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And watch Dune too.
Hey, it was really amazing talking to you as well.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that interview as much as we did, but it is time to end. And before we end, we'd like to thank Puru for being on the show one more time. And also, we'd like to let you know that if you're looking into getting a job, starting a project, doing whatever, and you're maybe, hey, I wouldn't mind contributing to open source like what we did, like what we talked about in this episode, but you don't know any coding, you too can learn how to code if you go and check out Scrimba. Scrimba has an interactive media player code editor where you can learn how to code by pausing what the instructor is doing. You can jump right into the code as to what they're showing on the screen. You can go in there, play with it, break it, see how it works, and then just continue the lesson just by pressing play and continuing to watch the lesson unfold right in front of your eyes. You can go and check that out. They have some free courses, they have some paid courses, and we do have an affiliate link. It will be in the show description as well as in the show notes on htmlallthethings.com. So go and check that out. And remember, if you want to support episodes like this, you can go to patreon.com/htmlallthethings. And many thanks to our $3 tier patrons: Tim from The Web Hacker on thewebhacker.com, Jason from Geek Life Radio via geeklife radio.com, Fire Ant Season via fireantseason.com, Garrett Segal, Level Up Financial Planning via www.levelupfinancialplanning.com, and Joshua via silvio.us. Feel free to leave a comment or a review in the platform you are listening to this on, and this outro will sign us off.
You've been listening to HTML All the Things Podcast. Web development, web design, and small business. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show, and we hope you appreciate that we talk to you like human beings, and we hope you had some fun. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, hit us up on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at HTML All the Things, and on Twitter at HTML Everything. Until next time, this is HTML All the Things, signing off.